Well, good evening and good morning, EPL State of Mind listeners. Welcome back for another special episode. We obviously didn't have any action this weekend, but we are bringing up the rear of our preseason review, or preview rather, part number two. So if you haven't already listened to part number one, it's already out there on all your favorite podcast platforms, Spotify, Apple Music, whatever your heart desires. So make sure you go back and listen to that one. A lot of hits on that. So we're only going to complete a fantastic season preview today. Obviously, we have international break, so we're taking a small break as well from EPL talk. So we're going to go over pretty much the last remaining 10 teams as we went through the first 10 teams in the preseason preview, and we're going to talk about them individually. We'll get into a brief transfer window overview since the winter window did close last week on the 31st at a little bit before midnight. I think it closed at 11. And if you got your stuff in beforehand, you still had a couple hours to make a transfer official. So we'll go through myself, Kyle, and Sean's best transfer window for a team as a team in its totality. Our favorite transfer might not be backed up on stats, but could be just personal opinion on who we're excited to see in the Premier League on a different team or for the first time. And then our predictions, who will be missed the most on a team that sold them or lost them or whatever happened to them, we am not sure. So a lot of fun, exciting things that we go over today. And we're going to start off with where we left off at the part one episode. So for part two, we're going to start off with the back 10. And that's going to be starting off with a team that is not unfamiliar to the Premier League. They're returning from a one-year hiatus at the championship level, and that is Leicester City. Someone who's also returning to the Premier League, who is not a stranger to it, is their coach, Steve Cooper. It's a new hire for them, but we've seen him obviously as a former Forest coach. Still think he's one of the strangest looking human beings in the world. So if you do not what he looks like, it's not like he went away and came back, but the dude is just strange. But hey, he's a professional coach and does a better job than I would. So you got to give it to him. But yes, so Leicester has returned triumphantly after finishing in first place in the championship. And may I say they did it pretty emphatically as well, or emphatically. Not as great as like outstanding as Burnley did the previous season with the points tally that actually beat, I believe, Leicester's previous record. But they do return. They had a great run. They, shocker here, their top goal scorer remained one Jamie Vardy, who's already got one goal in the season so far. So it will be fun to see him. It was a great return to him on the first game of the season against Spurs. So that will be a fun player to watch for the rest of the season. Drewsbury Hall had the most goals contributions, who we know now is no longer on Leicester. So we'll talk about that loss a little bit later. But it should be a fun team to watch. Overall, their activity was pretty solid. They did gain a couple people. They were fighting PSR regulations for a while. They were in a bit of a no man's land at the end of the championship season and going into the Premier League. So we weren't really sure whose point deduction would happen when, what fees would be or fines would be associated with it. But at the end of the day, Leicester actually just were recently acquitted from their alleged breach of the profit and sustainability regulations from the Premier League, which the Premier League is not exactly ecstatic about, and neither am I. Doesn't give me a lot of hope for the soon to be coming to the forefront issue that is Manchester City's breaches. Now, obviously, those, as we've talked in
nauseam, what breaches?
They're different types of breaches. So
the alleged breaches.
Yes,
whatever 115. Happens to innocent until proven guilty.
You are right now. That's why you're still there. But listen, we're on Leicester City. We'll get to Manchester City. Don't you worry, Kyle. And you can you can defend them all you want.
Oh, I will. Don't you worry.
But again, this is a different breach in the profit and sustainability regulations than what Man City is being charged. Leicester was charged because they were made up of a loss for three seasons leading up to the 2022-2023 season of between 129 million reported losses of 129 million, which is 24 million more than what you're permitted, which is the 105 million pounds losses over three seasons. But they have recently been acquitted of that. So hopefully we see a little bit more of an uptick from Leicester City. I think they're a team that could potentially stay up just from their experience in the league. Obviously, their team is a bit different right now. They do have a couple faces new to their squad that I like to point out with Oliver Skip, who was a kind of a minute man for Tottenham coming through their academy. They bought him for a transfer fee of $25 million. And then Facundo Buonanotte, which we've spoken about before, is probably the most Italian name in the Premier League from Brighton. He's on loan. So I think that's a great pickup for them as well on loan. Sean, I know you like the Foxes as well. You have anything you'd like to add to this squad?
Yeah, the other one that I wanted to mention is their second highest spend in the window, which is Bilal Elkanous from the Genk Academy. I mean, they produce great attacking players. Kevin De Bruyne, Leandro Trossard, Yannick Carrasco. He's the next one off the production line. Exciting number 10, really good passer. Look for him to probably contribute maybe somewhere between 8 to 10 assists if they stay up. And if he gets hurt or he doesn't perform, then I think they'll go down. I think this is a pretty thin squad. I don't like the Skip signing. They already have Harry Winks. It's like, yeah, let's run back the midfield that stunk at Tottenham. Why don't we just get Pierre and Mal Horberg while we're at it too?
Very valid point. Very valid point. Well, very good. Well, I think you nailed it. I think the goal or the objective for the Foxes is to stay up. Kyle, would you agree that they can do it? Yes or no?
Yeah. And, you know, I think everyone wants to see them stay up. Jamie Vardy is one of those players that you can't hate, and he's been there loyal forever. So I'm pretty sure I want to see him in the Premier League until he retires, and then Leicester can go do whatever they want to do. I don't care after that.
Yeah, as long as we get a good Jamie Vardy stint, we're all right. Well, on the opposite end of that spectrum, a team that we know is most likely going to stay up. In fact, we know they're going to stay up so much they're fighting or potentially for a title run. I think that's the goal for them. I think top four is highly achievable. It's Liverpool. So Sean, why don't you take us through your team's preseason preview?
Right. So from a change standpoint, obviously the biggest one is that Arne Slot has taken over from Jurgen Klopp. And as a result, Liverpool's played a little bit more composed, a little bit more deliberate in their build-up play and overall possession. I think they will cut down on conceding a lot of those counter-attacking goals that we saw them give up in the second half of last season. They have pretty solid depth, and they added to that with the addition of Federico Chiesa from Juve. They also did some succession planning by signing Georgi Mamardashvili from Valencia. He will not join Liverpool until next summer, but pretty quiet in terms of incomings, outgoings. Joel Matip and Thiago Alcantara left on free agents. Thiago retired. And then they also sold a few younger guys, Fabio Calvario and Sepp Vandenberg to Brentford, Bobby Clark to Red Bull Salzburg, and then Stefan Bajetic, who we talked about two seasons ago, kind of had an injury-riddled last 18 months. He goes on loan to Red Bull Salzburg as well. I think you kind of said it, James. At this point, the expectation should be that they finish top four. Obviously, nothing's given. But like I said, they have pretty good options in every position. I would say they have two solid options. Just comes down to whether or not they can keep the top guys healthy, and the main men being Trent Alexander-Arnold, Virgil van Dijk, Alisson Becker, Mohamed Salah. If those four stay healthy, they have a shot to compete with Man City. I would still say they're the favorite. They have a shot to compete with Arsenal. I would say Arsenal's probably still a little bit stronger as well. But they look good, and Slot has a really good track record of improving the teams that he inherits. He took AZ Alkmaar from a fifth-place finish to joint top in the Eredivisie before COVID in 2019-20. And then he took Feyenoord from third place to first in his first season in charge there. So he certainly has the ability to elevate the squad that he's working with, but we'll see. It's been an encouraging start so far. They played Nottingham Forest at the weekend. I don't really have too much else on that. I expect them to be there or thereabouts in terms of the title race for a good part of the season, and we'll see if they can keep pace.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they held first place for 12 weeks last season, so I would expect a very similar season for them as well, kind of bouncing between Man City, Arsenal, and Liverpool. I'll be interested to see who that fourth player is. But I think you have two more things on here. One thing that I was surprised and I forgot that you guys sold Bobby Clark I know he had a lot of appearances under Klopp, and he was a very promising center midfielder. So I thought that was a bit of a shock to me. And then one cool thing that I think has been implemented in a lot more transfer clause and policies now are sell-on clauses. And something to mention here is Liverpool also received $8 million or £8 million. I don't know what you have it under here, $8 million from their sell-on clause for Dominic Solanke to a £65 million move to Tottenham. So I think that's pretty cool. You'll see a lot more of those sell-on clauses, especially for those players at the younger age that have that potential, but they just can't stick around at these larger clubs. So something to keep an eye on. I thought that was very cool.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that was in pounds. My apologies. And Bobby Clark, obviously, there is also a sell-on clause, and they have the first opportunity to match an offer if it comes in the future. He reunites with Klopp's number two, Pep Linder. So it'll be interesting. But speaking of Peps, throw it over to our boy Kyle to break down the summer for his Manchester Citizens.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I did want to just quickly touch upon the Chiesa signing. I absolutely love that signing. I'm a Italian supporter. My heritage is Italian. And I mean, I think Sean mentioned to me, he's going to be the backup for Salah, which I think is brilliant. They're not young players, so you don't need a young backup, because it's not like Salah is going to be missing tons of time. But to have a quality seasoned player as the backup for a world-class seasoned player, I mean, I think that's the perfect move for Liverpool right now. But moving on to the Manchester City aspect of things, we'll start at the top. I mean, the coach, obviously, Pep Guardiola, absolute legend of the sport. They finished first last year. They're going to finish first again this year. Awesome stuff. Their average age, though, is on the older side. It's 26 and a half, which is, you know, it's not really what I want to be seeing. I'd prefer to see a 23, 24 there, just so we have some youth to build. That's always been Pep's style. So we are starting some seasoned players. But I think the tactical approach is just score a goal after 1,000 billion passes and then park the bus. You know, kick it a lot, pass it along the defense, and just hold possession. That seems to be what they're doing. And then find that one pass to Haaland where he is just the fastest, strongest player out there. So that's a very solid tactical approach for the team. Only transfer I really want to talk about coming back, it's not even really a transfer, it's just Gundogan. He's back. It's a huge signing for us. He's one of the most prolific Germans ever to play in the Premier League. Let's keep going. I mean, yeah. Transfers for the summer, it wasn't many. Honestly, guys, not many. The one I want to talk about really is Julian Alvarez. That's a big one for us. I think Haaland relied on him a lot as a very solid backup. He was very good at set pieces. He had a lot of composure on the field, and he basically completed football last year. So, I mean, love the guy.
Yeah. he got everything he could. He was the biggest transfer fee of the summer as well across all teams. And he was not necessarily a full-on starter either, which is insane, right? You can consider him a backup. But I'll get into it a little bit more when we talk about the transfer window as an overview. But I know we went to some massive technical mind genius with our technical guru, Kyle. But Sean, what do you see with Man City here?
I just wanted to mention their other signing this summer, which is Savio from their fellow City Group club, Girona. Nothing fishy there. Everything on the up and up. You know, they just bought basically a Riyad Mahrez regen for $25 million from their own club. Nothing fishy. As usual, City always very... You know,
well, I mean, we have to follow financial fair play rules. So I think million is a very smart number for a player of that quality.
Well, yeah, I think UEFA isn't even going to, I don't believe in Sean and Kyle, you might be able to correct me if I'm wrong here, but as far as profit and sustainability regulations go now, UEFA has come out and said that if you're buying or selling from a sister club, that they won't consider that as profit. So obviously they're buying it, so it doesn't really go against them, but obviously now Girona is kind of, you know, out of luck on that. Well. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. The the last question I really had for you guys on City is, it's something that one of my buddies brought up to me this week about Haaland, whether Haaland is a pure product of Pep at City, why he's scoring so many goals and the system itself, or like,
no,
because his argument genuinely, and I don't disagree with it, is that there are other players of that quality not scoring as many goals. Such as Salah,
I don't think there's anyone like out. That
where if you slot them in to Pep's and City's system, they would also be producing numbers similar to Haaland.
He was the top goal scorer in the Champions League the year before he came to Man City. He's been ripping it up since he was 17 or 18 years old. I mean, yes, obviously the system helps, the quality of players helps, but no, I don't think he's a product of it at all. He's top notch on his own.
Yep. No, agreed. I don't disagree with that. I mean, personally, I would just like to see him scoring and playing a little harder in bigger games. That seems to be his deficit, his goals in Champions League and finals.
It'll be interesting because Pep has said he's had a different work regimen this season than the previous. So maybe it's a little bit of Pep philosophy for this season. So we'll see if he improves exponentially, but he's still young. So he's going to improve over time, just genetically. So, or should I say software update every iOS 5 or something like that.
But yeah, that's really all I had on City. I don't know if you guys had any things to touch upon. It's a pretty cut and dry team right now. Pretty standard, no surprises so far this season.
Yeah, no, I had one thing. John, do you want to go first? You got something?
No, I was ready to move on, but you go ahead.
Yeah, one thing I want to highlight here is they didn't have a lot of movement on the transfer market. And Sean, you'll probably say, oh, this guy played at this loan for 12 years. But one thing to look at when you're talking about profit and sustainability, Man City was the team with the least amount of money spent and the most profit, essentially. So net, I'll call it. So they were out of 20 teams ranked 20 in net spend, meaning they made a profit of almost $100 million this season. And part of it is because obviously they sold Julian Alvarez. But when you really look at some underlying numbers here, there's three people that kind of stick out to me. It's a Sergio Gomez, a Taylor Harwood Bellis, and a Tommy Doyle. So Harwood and Doyle were both academy products. They were sold for $23 and $5 million total. Gomez was sold at a loss for around $6 million to Real Sociedad that they brought on when they purchased him relatively young. But I haven't even heard of Taylor Harwood or Tommy Doyle, and that went for $28 million. And the three of those guys combined went for a profit of $31 million. And I'll tell you, this is a crazy stat here. So I highlight it because the three players in total saw exactly one half of a full Prem season when you add up all their appearances in Premier League. So they had a total of, 19 games played in a Premier League. They had 21 cup games appearances domestic. So that's the FA Cup and the Carabao Cup. And then they had 17 appearances, really just slight cameos of minutes. I think Sergio Gomez saw 501 minutes, and he got one red card in that, which I thought was a fun little stat. So these guys that Man City's making this much money off of people that they don't even play. This is what sustainability is supposed to sort of look like, but obviously it helps with a lot of money. But those two academy grads is what the goal is for everything. That's how you're staying sustainable, but it's a monster of Man City to be able to do that. And we'll see that they're knocked down a couple pegs, hopefully, with the 115 charges, but we'll get back to that in a future podcast. But I agree. Why don't we move on? Sean, why don't you lead the way with Manchester United? I know we could all talk for days about this, so why don't you kick it off?
Yeah, traveling across the city to Manchester United, coming off a very disappointing eighth-place season. Erik ten Hag's third season on the job now, basically winning the FA Cup against Manchester City in the final last year, saved his position. They're coming off a season where they conceded 58 goals, the most by a Manchester United team in the Prem era, and the most dating back to, I think it was 1978. So to address that, they've brought in a lot of guys on the defensive side of the ball. Lenny Yoro for $62 million from Lille is the headliner. He's currently out with a ankle injury. He's basically considered the top teenage center back on the planet, wanted by Real Madrid, Liverpool, but Manchester United get him, which is a big get for them. It's unfortunate that he's injured, but I think he's going to be a top player whenever he does get the opportunity to play. Moving on down to Matthias De Ligt and Nassor Mesraoui, who are basically a double swoop on Bayern Munich. Both players who played for Erik ten Hag at Ajax in the past, 25 and 26, so they're right in the prime of their careers. Really solid players all around. I think De Ligt, we thought basically, when he was Euro's age, he was going to be the best player on the planet or the best defender on the planet. Mm-hmm. He hasn't quite hit those heights, but is he a reliable Champions League quality player? 100%. So that's an upgrade on Johnny Evans and Harry Maguire, without a question.
Not even the same ballpark.
We saw it. Yep. No, not even close. And then you have Joshua Zirkzee, who moved over from Bologna at striker. We've seen him a little bit. Very technically gifted player for someone who's 6'4". He's shown some flashes. Him and Hoyland will be competing whenever Hoyland's back for that number nine role. And then the last signing right at the end of the window for $50 million from PSG is Manuel Ugarte. Since 2023, he leads all of Europe in tackles and interceptions. Consider him like a Joao Palhinha, very similar player to that, just a classic destroyer, really good at breaking up play. The question mark with him is whether or not he has the ability on the ball, but I guess Manchester United's thought is you have Fernandes and you have Manu, who are very technically gifted. They'll be able to basically make up for what his deficiencies with the ball at his feet. That remains to be seen, but I think he'll definitely help in terms of breaking up transitions where Manu are very vulnerable. And also we won't have to see Casemiro as frequently, which is ugly or was ugly so far this season. So I think it's a really good step for them in terms of their business. They've really been one of the worst teams in terms of the transfer business in the last, you know, probably 5-6 years, but I think this is a step in the right direction. They get younger. They bring in some players who are, you know, proven quality and should upgrade the floor of this team. I think they're competing for that four spot, but more realistically, I think they end up finishing in the Europa League spot.
Yeah, I would agree. I think they finally found the proper demographic in their transfer window for this season. Not trying to put band-aids on by bringing in, like they did a couple seasons ago, Casemiro, a veteran, but of too old of an age. Like you said, I think with Mazraoui, I think with De Ligt, I think that was a great immediate impact with longevity. So I think that's huge for Manchester United. And I think they had a lot better of a window than many people will think that they did, because they didn't bring in any headliners. Besides, I would say De Ligt is probably headliner. And then obviously Ugarte is going to develop into more. He's only 23 right now. But I think they did really, really well here. Moving along to Newcastle United, I'm very interested to see where Newcastle goes this season. They were struggling and were kind of pigeonholed due to financial fair play or profit and sustainability regulations. A lot of people thought that a big team like Arsenal or Liverpool or even Manchester City would come in and swoop up like one of their main players as Bruno Fernandes. Bruno Guimarães or Isak. Or even someone along the lines of, actually, those are pretty much the two main guys that were really profitably poachable.
Anthony Gordon, too. There's rumors of him going to Liverpool. Yeah. It's basically those three.
Yeah. You know, some strong, you know, key role components of their offense and central midfielders. I was obviously a huge advocate to bring Isak to Arsenal. All my letters obviously went unheard. But we will talk about that later. But overall, I think they had a very good window and a very good preseason for what is going to become a good season for them. They don't lose a lot of their main players. They gain some depth. I think they're pretty much the same team, but streamlined a little bit. They obviously lost Minta, who we'll talk about. They lost him for $35 million to Brighton. They only brought him on last year for, I believe it was $8 million. So talk about a quick turnaround and profit for a player that was on loan last year at Feyenoord, I believe. So it wasn't even that quick. You didn't really see any time with Newcastle, but really good sale there. And then Elliot Anderson, 21, central midfielder, $41.5 million to Nottingham Forest. So they actually stayed in the green this transfer window, with roughly around $10 million in the green. They did lose, they brought in a couple younger players and a backup goalie for Nick Pope. Not sure where they were going to go with him at the injury at the end of last season into this
Please
one.
Pronounce but, his name. Please pronounce the backup goalie's name.
All right, let's do it, everybody. Red drumroll, please. I believe it is Odysseus Valachiadimos.
Odysseus Vlachodimos.
Vlachodimos. Odysseus sounds more like he wants to be like the king of the sea or something like that. But listen, I think it's going to be a good season for them because you always people forget too. They essentially have the new signing of Tonali as well. He was obviously on the chopping block last season for violations of the betting regulations. That didn't even happen on Newcastle. Remember, that happened when he was over in Serie A. So Newcastle got really shafted with that one. But it's the same team, possibly a stronger team with Tonali coming in now. So it'll be very interesting to see where Eddie Howe goes. I think their goal, Sean, you nailed it, top six. Get into the Europa and fight for that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the floor or the baseline for them. Could they finish in the top four potentially? But I didn't like their summer. I didn't really like their moves. Moving over to a team that also I didn't really like their moves is Nottingham Forest. They're going into their first full season with Nuno Espirito Santo. He took charge in December of last season. They finished in 17th, just staying up thanks to the really bad formerly promoted teams and now currently relegated teams of Luton. And I can't even remember Burnley and somebody else who was terrible. Sheffield United, they're all so bad. They were all forgettable besides Luton. But yeah, I mean, basically they're known for sitting deep, punishing teams on the counter with pace. They have Alanga, Gibbs White, Callum Hudson-Odoi. Kyle talked about them last week. They've started the season well from a defensive standpoint, only conceding, I think it's one goal through three games. Obviously the biggest signing was Elliot Anderson, who we just discussed moving over from Newcastle. Young central midfielder. This is another team that was up against, you know, PSR punishments. They were docked 4 points last season. They made some decent business this year with 12.9 in terms of profit, but I don't think anyone that really raises the floor or the ceiling for this team. Overall, I think the one guy I wanted to highlight was the signing of James Ward-Prowse on loan from West Ham. This is a team that was 17th in set piece goals last season with six. How do you address that? You bring in Mr. Set Piece himself, the joint top Premier League direct free kick scorer of all time. He had, I think, 7 or 8 assists last year for West Ham. The only problem, it's like that Moneyball meme where it's like, this is James Ward-Prowse. He's incredible at free kicks. His only defect is he's terrible when the game is in open play. But we'll see if they can kind of counteract that with some of the pace and the other guys that they have around him. I think this is a team that probably will be battling the relegation zone, depending on how the performance of the other, you know, promoted teams do. We'll see. But the guy I wanted to highlight for them is Jesus Murillo. Had a really good season last year for them. He's only 22 years old. Very good ball playing center back. I think he'll likely be on the move either in the winter window or next summer. I think he's one of their best players and someone to keep an eye on for sure.
Kyle, do you think I'm going to let you take care of Southampton as well, but you think Nottingham Forest has a chance of staying up here?
Staying up, absolutely. I would be very surprised to see them go down this year. Now, fighting for European contention is another story.
No.
I think they're going to finish anywhere in the, I would say, 13-9 range if they can keep doing what they're doing.
That'd be a really good year for them.
Yeah, I mean, they're doing good business. They're bringing in, you know, players to fill the gaps that they had last year. They're clearly looking at that stuff. So I have high hopes for Nottingham Forest. I like them a lot. They're fun to watch. They just need to really step it up on offense because their defense is doing their job, like Sean mentioned, but their offense cannot rely on one goal per game to compete in the Premier League. Simple as that. I mean, you could have Newcastle's defense from 2 years ago. Still, they finished almost, what was it, fifth? And you score one goal per game, Newcastle, even then, with their unbelievable defense, would have been bottom of the table. So it's, you got to focus up top. But moving on.
Not getting it done for you?
What was that?
Chris Wood's just not getting it done for you quite yet.
Not yet. Love the name. Love the last name. But I mean, we gotta focus up where it matters. And I don't think he's the biggest hole on the team right now.
Yeah. Well, a team that potentially could have a few holes because they just came up. It's the team that plays at St. Mary's. No stranger to the Premier League either. This is Southampton. Right now, Sean, I would love to just start off with the fact that you've been quizzing me and Kyle on all season so far after three games. Which team has the most possession in the Prem League right now, if you go based off per game percentages?
Yep, that would be Southampton, believe it or not, at 74.3%. What they're doing with it, squat, diddly squat. However, yeah, they do keep the ball. That's something that Russell Martin, the manager, really emphasizes. He plays a mid block. He was known as the manager at MK Dons when they broke the record for 56 passes leading to a goal in 21-22. Obviously very control oriented. Their main man is Adam Armstrong. He scored 3 goals in the playoffs last year. He scored 21 goals and 13 assists in the championship. But to supplement him, they brought in Cameron Archer and Ben Brereton Diaz, who were both at Sheffield United last season. They also brought in Taylor Harwood-Bellis, a guy that we just talked about, a former Man City grad. He was on loan last year at Southampton and was one of the EFL Team of the Year players, as well as Flynn Downes, another Premier League loanee. He came over from West Ham on a permanent basis this summer. They brought in Leslie Ogechukwu from Chelsea. But the last guy I want to talk about is somebody that is very near and dear to your heart, and it's Aaron Ramsdale. So obviously he's going to be the guy that steps in, but do you think he'll be good enough, or is this window good enough to keep them up?
I mean, unfortunately, looking at the track record, Aaron Ramsdale we got him from, I believe, Sheffield United, who was a relegated team. He is no stranger to this battle. He is a shot-stopping goalkeeper, which is part of the reason why we originally were looking at him, to get some youth to get shot-stopping and hopefully develop a little bit more with distribution. Not necessarily distribution would per se his downfall. He's very good at long balls, quick releases with punts and drop kicks. Very good at that long distribution, I think, with the ball at his feet behind a kind of shaky back line is a challenge. But like you said before, they aren't that shaky. They have possession. They like to keep the possession. So I think he'll be able to really help this team stay up. It really depends. I mean, they did a lot of good movement in the offseason, as you kind of rattled off. But I think it's a great opportunity for Aaron Ramsdale to get his name back out there and rightfully take, I think, England's number one spot away from, I think, someone who's on the outgoing, which is Jordan Pickford. But
I hate Pickford. Fuck that guy. So yeah, I'm glad to see him failing so far this season.
Almost yeah. The only thing I was
of a goalkeeper right now.
You're taking this really personally, Kyle. I didn't realize you were such an.
Here's the thing. I mean, I'm so deep into the whole I hate Jordan Pickford world that I forget why I hate him. Honestly.
It's because his arms are significantly there. Everyone's arms are supposed to be like equal to their body. Like that's their wingspan, right? Jordan Pickford has some type of very non-curable disease where his is a roughly the same length as what a T-Rex's would be comparable to his body. So unfortunate for a goalie. But Sean, what were you going to say?
I just don't think their midfield's good enough for them to stay up. I know obviously they're big on possession, but you look through it. I mean, look at just their last game against Southampton. This was their midfield. It was Flynn Downes, Joe Aribo, and Will Smallbone. I mean, that just doesn't really inspire here into anyone's hearts. I just don't see the goals, and I don't see the midfield being good enough to keep them up. Would be happily proven wrong. I just don't think that's going to be the case. You look pretty much across all the teams in the Premier League, there's clear good, like the guys that even the other teams, there's clear go-to guys where you can rely upon for goals. They don't have that as well. I mean, I know Adam Armstrong was that guy for them last year at the championship. He's not proven it at the Premier League level. I think they finished bottom of the table.
I would agree with you on that. Unfortunate, but it's a volleyball club, right? They go up and down. That's what they've been doing for decades.
Now, when you say bottom, are you saying dead last or just relegation?
20th.
Oof. All right, there's the call.
Put it. I think the odds are probably in the favor of that as well, if you were to look at a bookmaker. But we won't really be able to tell how the table is shaping off until they typically say week 10 is normally when you start to see the best form for the future of the table. But we'll give our final predictions much sooner than that so everyone can kind of ride or die with us. Talking about a ride or die, let's talk about Ange Ball.
Oh boy.
Someone who's coming in for his second season now, where he finished 5th place last season in a very ride or die mentality where we're going to play a very pressing game. We're playing a high line and we're not going to change no matter what happens in the game. That's pretty much Ange Ball in a nutshell. Last year, I think we really enjoyed it because it was complete polar opposite from what Conte was in playing, and he'd sit back, allow a lot of pressure, and then go on a quick counter. So I think a lot of people were saying, oh, this is a complete new Tottenham, because it was a complete new Tottenham. And it helps when last season they had a 95 million pound striker that they offloaded, who still hasn't won any trophies other than a trophy in the Bundesliga that is also shaped like a cannon, ironically. Love that for him, of Harry Kane. But I think the Spurs, again, had another good offseason with the transfer window, but in a completely different manner than the season prior, right? So the season prior was almost like they hit the wild card button in the Fantasy Premier League app and just totally replenished most of their center spine of the team, including a very good goalie who we'll talk about in the future in the Premier League for sure as being a very, very good one. But this season in the summer, they went a kind of a different route, right? So Levy opened up the checkbook again, but not as much, obviously, because of Harry Kane's sale last season. And they got rid of a lot of dead weight is what I'm seeing here, right? So on the out, right, you had Joe Rodon, who I don't even know who that guy was. He was a center back for him. You had Højbjerg, who was on the outside of his, you know, prime. He left for free. Emerson Royale is someone who I liked as a player individually, but didn't really fit into the Tottenham Spurs style. He spent millions of dollars on his body to keep it in shape. He was doing the right things, just couldn't cut it at Spurs. And then Oliver Skip, who was the academy, who they got a handsome fee for, which I think was the right move because I don't think he is a highly rated player. So I don't think he, you know, increased the speed of play or Spurs' ability to win a game. Now, on the opposite end, on bringing in players, they had one major signing, which was to try to alleviate that lacking hole that was Harry Kane, and that was with Dominic Solanke. I think they paid a little bit higher than market value for him than I would have personally wanted to see come in for Dominic because I believe he's 26. So he's in his prime, but is it prime for three more years that's showing promise? He's only had one 30-plus goal season. That's when he was in the championship. He had a really great year last year, obviously, tying Ollie Watkins with 19 goals, who we've talked about superstar status for the past season. So I think there's a lot of potential there. But what I wanted to point out is they brought in five guys. Four of them, three specifically, are 18 years old, and one's 19 years old. So you can tell that Spurs have found their team. They're now harping and fine-tuning on what they were brought in last season. And I think it's right. I think they're going to be a tough team. Unfortunately for the Gunners, we have them next with a Declan Rice and now possibly Martin Odegaard less North London derby. And I think Spurs are a team that you're going to want to watch out for. And I think they're a team that could easily fight for that top four, fourth spot with Villa and Newcastle. And I'm going to dare and say it, Chelsea.
Bold. Yeah. I mean, they brought in more teenagers than the casting couch this summer for sure. They've been really emphasizing the youth. The guy I like a lot, there's actually two signings. I think Archie Gray from Leeds United. They spent a pretty penny on him at 41.5 million. He played both the six and right back last year. I think he's someone that long term could potentially replace Bissouma. And then Wilson Odebear from Burnley, he showed flashes. He had a couple of injuries last year, but he's a really dynamic dribbler. And I think we talked about him a little bit last week as well. He's the type of classic, you know, touchline winger who's very good one-on-one dribbling that they needed. Kind of opens up space for James Maddison to run into or to, you know, to pull back into for chances. So I think both those guys are good fits. And I agree with you. I think I see them as the fourth best team in the league, competing with Aston Villa for that spot. Aston Villa, United, obviously Chelsea, again, like you said, deserve some recognition as well. But I think they have a good chance, although they haven't started fantastically. And I think a win this weekend, though, would really springboard their season.
Yeah. And I just want to touch upon one of their transfers in Emerson Royale coming in from AC Milan at right back. I think that's genius. A lot of players.
Oh, other way around.
Oh, he's going?
Other way around. He's going. He's going. He's gone.
That's a shame. I think he'll thrive there. My point there was going to be that Serie A is very similar to the Premier League when it comes to physicality, especially if you're going to a Milan team. I mean, that is the most dirty game in all of football, in my opinion. The Milan Derby, we had, what, three red cards last time they played? It was
actually, I think you're right.
Vicious.
Yeah, it was crazy.
I absolutely love the Milan Derby, so I think they can compete in the Premier League and vice versa. So I do like that transfer a lot.
Yeah.
Even if, Sean, even if he's going. Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah. Sean, why don't you wrap it up with the, well, we got two left, but swing us to London, another London team, and that's yep. West Ham United. I think there's one underlining number that we want to talk about the most, but go ahead for it.
Yeah, we're talking about the youth at Tottenham. I mean, this is the oldest squad in the league now at 28.4 in terms of their average age. They have Julian Lopetegui, who our boy Nick Cartwright once famously dubbed Luigi on the podcast. they had a really good summer. I like their summer quite a bit. I mean, looking at their team last year, right, they conceded 74 goals. They had the most goals conceded of anyone that wasn't relegated. Jared Bowen obviously being the main man with his 16, but I mean, what can we say about their defense last year that's not been said about Al-Qaeda? I mean, they were horrible. They were horrendous. But hopefully with David Moyes' terrorist ball gone, they can kind of take the next step forward. And I think they did a lot of that with some of their moves this summer. They bring in Max Kilman from Wolves for $47.5 million. Crescencio Somerville from Leeds, a really dynamic, exciting winger. Nicholas Füllkrug, this one was a little bit weird to me. He's a 31-year-old striker from Dortmund. He kind of really broke out in the last two or three years. Had a great season at Dortmund, but I'm not sure he fits in terms of the pace of the Premier League.
Especially at that value, 27 mil is outrageous.
Yeah, and I think he only had a year left on his contract. I don't really get that move personally, but we'll see. Luis Guilherme, they bring him over from Palmeiras in Brazil. I think he'll take some time to hit the ground. But overall, he'll be an upgrade on Saeed Benrahma, who departed this summer. 18-year-old winger, kind of similar to the Matheus Franca signing from Crystal Palace last year. Very exciting. They bring in Aaron Wan-Bissaka from Manchester United at right back. We know he's obviously limited on the ball, but defensively, one-on-one, one of the best, you know, fullbacks in the league. Yeah. And then the gem of the summer and one of the best signings for me is Jean-Claire Todibo, the center back they bring in from OGC Nice. It was a loan with an option to buy. They beat out Manchester United for his signature. He's a stud. He's only 24 years old, entering the prime of his career. Center backs typically take a little bit more time to ascend. This guy's played for Barcelona. He's very well thought of. I think it's a very good summer for them. And again, they'll be a team that's competing for Europe as well. Kind of consider them on the same tier as Newcastle. I think that their moves this summer kind of put them on that level. Maybe I'm a little too high on them, but I really like the reliability of Kilman, who played every minute for Wolves last year. Wan-Bissaka, obviously very good defensively, and then Todibo. I think those are three really good signings that'll help address their defensive issues.
100%. They had to refortify their defense, and I know we don't talk about League One a lot, just because it's not necessarily top competition. But OG Nice had one of their best seasons in the history of the club. They finished fifth place. They had the least amount of goals against in the league with 29. So bringing in their main center back on there, I think you nailed it right on the head there. I think that's going to be a really exciting signing for them. And I'll be looking forward to watching him play and kind of harping on him individually. So that's West Ham. So we'll see if Jack Dugan watches more than four games this year, and we'll keep a tally of that as well. I'm sorry, Jack, that wasn't fair. You do watch a lot more than we give you credit for now. So I'm looking forward to hearing your take eventually on the pod for West Ham United. But Sean, you brought up Nick beforehand with Luigi. You want to finalize and put a good stamp on this with the Wolverhampton Wanderers, who last year I dubbed as my shocker to go down. They proved me wrong. They stayed up. They kind of went with the same transfer window approach as they did the year before, which I thought was a bit strange considering that they're in the green again. But hey, listen, if they keep getting rid of their best players for high value and somehow stay up, I guess it's a good business model.
Yeah, I that's the key, right? You have to be able to stay up. Last year was very much monetarily motivated. They were up against breaking PSR restrictions, so they tried to avoid that. This summer, like you said, they make 52.5 in terms of total profit. I think that's the second best of anyone in the Premier League, obviously behind Man City. But to me, I'm focused more, like you said, on the outgoings than the incomings. They lose Pedro Neto, who is their talisman, to Chelsea for $60 million. They lose Max Kilman, who, as I just said, was one of two players to play every single minute in the Premier League last season. They were most successful when they were operating with three center backs. They lose their best one in Max Kilman. They don't bring any center backs in. That's a little puzzling to me. We talked about Tommy Doyle a little bit coming on. He was on loan last year at Wolves. It's permanent signing now. Jürgen Strand Larsen was signed on loan with an obligation to buy. He's already signed, basically, or already scored. Big physical striker that that Nick was looking for. And then the other guy I want to talk about was Rodrigo Gomez, who fits, again, if you go back and listen to the episode Into the Wolves Den with Nick, which I highly recommend. It's a great laugh.
Fucking hysterical.
He says that Wolves' transfer strategy is hot Portuguese guys. Rodrigo Gomez is the definition of the Wolves' transfer strategy. Young, pacey, dynamic, hot Portuguese. So he should be fun to watch whenever we get
to see him.
My
goodness, James, stop sweating.
Coming over from Braga. He's an exciting player. They also brought in Andre Trindade from Fluminense, Brazilian deep-lying playmaker, really well thought of. He was supposed to go to Fulham, was rumored to go to Liverpool last year when they were looking for sixes. So I'm very interested to see how he copes with the pace and physicality of the Prem, but he is definitely a talented, technically gifted player who, you know, should have some moments of brilliance. Putting him alongside João Gomes, who they have is just kind of a straight bulldog in midfield, should be interesting. And then obviously up top, now you have Matheus Cunha, who's very talented Brazilian forward. You put him next to Strand Larsen, who's 6'4", physical. They have a nice little balance to their squad. I don't think they're, you know, competing for the top half of the table, but they should be safe, in my opinion.
Yeah, I will not undersell them again or doubt them. So it'll be fun to watch them. Glad we got them out of the way as for the first game before they get into stride, because they are obviously last season, they were one of the teams to take points off of Manchester City. I believe it was even away at City. So, you know, not a team that you want to take lightly, just randomly, they could have a good day. But with that being said, that does wrap up this season's preview. It's the last 10 teams. Remember, if you did not hear the first 10, go back, check out our part one of the episode. That was about 2.5-3 weeks ago, probably right before the beginning of the season. So probably around the 3-week mark. But we're not done here today. We're going to take a quick break and we're going to do a very high level, real quick, rapid fire transfer window overview with our favorites and our comments. We'll be right back. Okay, just out of our quick little deliberation there, I think we're about to have two of the hottest takes of the season yet provided to us by Kyle, all about this transfer window, because Kyle does a lot of judgment off of what, Kyle?
Whoa. These are going to be phenomenal takes. And at the end of the season, you'll be groveling at my feet asking me where I learned such greatness.
Yeah, you judge with the heart, which is fair, which is fine. But we will all start off on the same foot here, and it's going to be who had the best window. I'll open up. I kind of alluded to it a little bit beforehand. I was between two, but ultimately, I think Manchester City had the best window. I would say this, and you know, against every good bone in my body, but if you look at the business side of it, I think you have to go with Sydney, right? They sold a great player in Alvarez for a $50 million profit, still young. Sold him after picking him up for $20 million, and he's not even a starting player for them. You know, he's not beating Haaland. So they offloaded him. He wanted more playing time. There was an issue there. They said, okay, go have more playing time. We'll make $50 million off you. You're not making my team any worse. I'm still strong. And they did, you know what? I'm going to bring in a great, I believe he's 20 years old. We talked about already, and Savinho, who might be the mirror image of Dooku on the right-hand side of the pitch. An insane ball dribbler, great speed. He's so young, his ceiling is so high. I think that this is a great pickup for them. They made the most money in the window. They solved their Cancelo problem with selling him at market value, of course, to Saudi Arabia. No fishy smells over there either. But sold him at market value for that. On I believe he had one, maybe two last year, two more years on his contract, but he wasn't going to play another minute. So any team could have held out and got him for a free transfer. And then, of course, they doubled down on Barcelona and said, I'm not, you know, I'm just going to take Gundogan back for you for free. No loan, no transfer fee. Probably got reduced salary wages off of him too. So they kind of stabilize the middle with a little bit additional backup who is already playing again in Pep's system because he knows the system. Now, the only thing I would say that would make their window a little bit better is if they did go out and buy a young central-minded attacking midfielder to possibly follow in Kevin De Bruyne's footsteps with, you know, murmurs of him. I'm not sure how much longer he'll be at the club for, how much they'll be able to sell him at that point for his age. But I'm sure, Sean, there's some type of academy player that you've bought on FIFA, you know, managerial squad that that they'll find as well. So overall, I think Man City takes the cake. Kyle, actually, let's go Sean, you first. Let's go two reasonable and one hot take.
Yeah, so reasonable Sean, take is Brighton. They spent the most amount of money. They bring in some really, really talented young players. I'm going to tell you right now, spoiler alert, Yankuba Minta is one of my favorite signings of the summer. I've talked about him multiple times on the pod. I think he's Sadio Mane reincarnated. Jorginho Rutter from Leeds is a good signing. They finally addressed their midfield since the departures of Caicedo and McAllister with Matt O'Reilly, who unfortunately got hurt in his first match, and then Mats Wijver. I think those are really good moves. And the other thing is it's Brighton, right? We know they know what they're doing in the transfer market. It's been proven over and over. They bring in, I think it's eight first-team players. The odds of five of them hitting, the way Brighton's business model works, are high. So they're investing in guys that raised the ceiling of their squad. They're all under the age of 25 years old. I think they've set themselves up, if not this year, but down the road to be Champions League contenders. I think that fourth spot certainly up for the taking. We mentioned multiple teams today that could finish there. Why not them? I think they put themselves in the position to do so. I think they are my winners of the transfer window.
That'd be awesome to see Brighton in a Champions League spot. Obviously not at the expense of any of our teams other than Manchester City, but that would be pretty cool.
Hey. All right. You know, I'm going to go into the actual best transfer window of the Premier League, which had to fall at Nottingham Forest's feet. I mean, talk about masterclass. Did anyone see them in the top 10 after 3 weeks? Absolutely not. They spent a ton of money. They got rid of a lot of players. They brought in six and they made money. Like, this was a phenomenal transfer window. And I think that the big thing was that they filled their gaps. They looked at what they did not do well last year and they got transfers for it. So I think it's already showing. Honestly, if you guys had asked me this 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, before the season started, they would not be my best transfer window. But seeing the results of their transfer window is why I have them up top. No one could see that one coming.
I mean, you can't knock them too much. They haven't had great competition with Wolves and Southampton, obviously. They played Nottingham Forest home, always tough.
I mean, Nottingham Forest is Nottingham Forest.
That was the AFL Cup.
They played they're playing with themselves.
They played Bournemouth. They're playing.
Is that what Arsenal just did by letting Odegaard go on international break?
Oh, come on. All right, fuck it. We're going on to the next one. Favorite signing, Sean, go.
Yeah, Minta, I mentioned, but this time I'll take Jean-Claire Todibo from West Ham, or to West Ham from Nice. We just talked about it. I think he really solidifies their back line. Loan to buy deal, I think that's a massive, massive boost for them.
Yeah, absolutely. Kyle, your favorite.
It's Chiesa to Liverpool. I think it's a genius signing. It's not even a hole that they had, but they just put triple sealant on a small crack. It's crazy.
Yeah, very fair. He's one of my favorites to see, you know, come to the Premier League as well. Another one coming to the Premier League, not for the first time. We saw him in Newcastle. He's actually coming to Arsenal. If it wasn't for the injury, he would be my outstanding number one, and that's Mikel Merino, not only because he looks like Edu and Mikel Arteta and is also another Spaniard, but I think that he kind of solved our problem of a box-to-box midfielder with that aggressiveness that we lost with Granit Xhaka. I think that he would fit in to where I think Partey lacks the legs. And then, obviously, I think we would probably ultimately move Rice back to the six. He comes in as that box-to-box as the eight. And then you have the magician who is now the injured Odegaard as the 10. But I really think that Mikel Merino, when healthy, will be a great, great signing for us.
No bias there. James picks the Arsenal guy. What a shock.
You can't say he was not an exciting signing.
Crazy. You know, it's just people picking their own guys from their
own
teams.
He's boring and he's ugly. For that. I can say whatever I want.
Yeah.
It's a free country.
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is, but got to do it.
He's 28 years old.
Well, he had the most tackles. He had a great
He brought in an AARP midfielder. I mean, congratulations. I don't even know if he's your best signing of the window. At least Calafiore is good looking.
Yeah. Well, Calafiore, I just don't see him getting into the starting 11 right away, which I
James,
I
you named your fantasy team after that man.
I did. Hotel Calafiore. Great name.
Great name. Great player.
But I'm waiting for the chance, the even better chance for him. But I'll kind of do it snake style. The biggest miss of the transfer window, meaning the team who lost one of their star players for either not enough money or just shouldn't have let him go at all. And I'm going to take one of Sean's favorites, my favorite to watch. We said it 1,000 times when Eze, Olise, and Mateta are on the field for Crystal Palace. They are some different type of supersonic, silky smooth. And unfortunately, say that 5 times fast, but unfortunately, I don't think we're going to see that this year for Crystal Palace because of the loss of Olise to Bayern Munich. Kyle, shocker here.
James, Julian Alvarez. I mean, I would have liked to see him stay. I understand why he's going. A player of that caliber to not start is preposterous. That being said, he was a phenomenal player for the team. Really helped out City, scored a lot of set piece goals, a lot of very important goals last year. Specifically, I remember a top left shot from outside the box coming in from the right where he had no business putting it in that place, but that helped us win the game, which helped us win the season. He's a quintessential player, and we don't have a player of that caliber to back up Erling Haaland right now. So, yeah, I think it's tough to see him go for a team trying to contend. I mean, we are one injury away from not having a striker. That's not fair. One injury away from not having the striker, the one guy you can rely on.
Yep, that's fair. That's very fair. Sean, this is, if you haven't heard our part one, definitely go back and look because we highlighted this. Sean, who's yours?
Yeah, João Paulinho leaving Fulham. He's led the Premier League in blocks and interceptions for 2 or 3 seasons now. They replaced him with Sander Berg, who was at Burnley last year. A solid player, but doesn't have the same level of ground covering or ability to break up play that Paulinho has. I think it's going to really hurt Fulham's defense.
Yep, agreed. All right, and then to round it all off, we started with the best teams in the window. Let's go with the worst teams in the window. I'll start off. I have selected the Cherries, not solely because of Solanke, but 95% because they sold their best and pretty much their best striker, their best player, without really replacing him very well. So they lost their number one striker. And then obviously one interesting one was they brought up Kepa from Chelsea. I believe he's on loan, like you said, Sean, but I this just was a poor window for the Cherries. I still think they won't be relegated because they have the experience, but I wouldn't be surprised if Leicester gives the Cherries and who else? We were just talking about Nottingham Forest, a potential run for their money there. But Sean, and then Kyle, we'll end it with you with your hot take. But Sean, how about you?
Newcastle United. I know I just said that I think they could compete for Europe, but that's just because they should have better luck with injuries. They get Tonali back as well, but you can't look at who they brought in this summer and tell me that they got better. I just don't think that's the case.
You can't.
Vlachodimos, like you talked about, is a backup goalie. Lloyd Kelly is a decent rotational player. William Osula, they brought from Sheffield United. Anything with Sheffield United on it has some stench. No thanks. So I don't personally see how they got better. I think it's a pretty poor window from them. And my signing of the window was Yakuba Minta, and they sold him. So that also counts against them as well.
Yep, absolutely. Great call. Great shout. Kyle?
Manchester United. What a poor transfer window out of Manchester United. I was going to say Brighton, kick you honestly. In
the stomach so the next time he sees
Brighton
you.
Fans just know I had you very, very low. I know Sean put them as the best window. I thought it was one of the worst. But yeah, United, get your shit together. I mean, it's pathetic what's going on over there right now at Old Trafford. You guys lost fucking £130 million in your transfer window, and you brought in my opinion, no one of great caliber. I mean, you've been bringing in all these big names, big money, and it's been backfiring on your ass so hard. And guess what? I mean, De Ligt, good player, sure. Xerxes, could be great, absolutely. But the players you let go, McTominay, Varane, Bissaka, Greenwood, they're thriving. That's your core. How dare you get rid of them?
Greenwood?
Yeah, Greenwood, Mason Greenwood. You know the guy?
Yeah. For not...
I mean, he's doing well.
Just,
he's doing
very we're not even right touching now. That one. I don't want to touch that one.
But listen. At the end of the day, is you're going to get rid of your best players. You do that to make a profit. You don't get rid of your star player. I wouldn't say that they're star players. I mean, McTominay played out of his mind last year, I thought, for a center defensive mid. But you're getting rid of your good players and still losing $130 million and still keeping your wasted transfers, and you're not playing well. I'm sorry. I think this was an abysmal transfer window. Either get rid of your good players and take the profit and build. Maybe wait a season, build, get some big names, or keep your best players. I mean, it's not rocket science here, guys.
Well, I think one thing that goes for you as a point, it's in favor of Kyle's hot take here, is that you look at those guys that they did sell, and I believe they sold each one besides maybe Mason Greenwood, because he was academy product, I think, Sean, for a loss, right? So you lost Scott McTominay, Bisaka. I think you sold them for losses, and relatively large losses.
Well, McTominay is an academy grad as well, so that's
he's an academy grad. Your profit. Well.
I mean, I don't agree, Kyle. I think I get what you're saying. They spent a lot of money, but they actually, for once, did the right thing in terms of long term squad building. They brought in players entering the prime of their careers instead of guys that are on the decline for massive wages, like your boy World Class Casemiro. I'm not going to defend United more than that.
I mean, there you go. Another one.
The worst. I think they had one of the better ones. I would say they probably had a top five window at a minimum, personally.
Also, Mason Greenwood right now is the top goal scorer in all of France.
Okay, dude. And he was also accused of sexual abuse. So, like, you got to get rid of him. It's a bad look.
I'm not laughing at that. I'm laughing at Sean's explanation. Yeah. He wasn't going to make the cut. But also, it's France.
Yeah, Marseille's about to sign Vladimir Putin this summer. Holy shit, man! They were going crazy with like the worst guys you ever heard of. They got Neil Mopay too. Not that he's on that level, but still.
Yeah, they did. He's top shithousery. But anywho, I will be looking forward to see Kyle if we are graveling, in fact, at your feet by the end of the season. But you have it here. This is the part two of our preseason review. I hope you all enjoyed it. I know we had a lot of good takes, a lot of back and forth. If you do or do not agree on something that we've said here, please let us know. Be happy to reach out and be happy to share your opinions on the next cast and when we talk about your team next. So don't be a stranger. And until then, we'll talk to you next week.